If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I don't know about you, but I am ready to be done with the heat and ready for sweatshirt weather. Whether you're excited about sweaters, pumpkin everything, or decorating for Halloween, Pair Eyewear offers infinite possibilities starting at just $60, including a prescription. Plus, you get 15% off by using code HEARTBREAK at PairEyewear.com. I was so excited to shop for and receive my Pair Eyewear sunglasses. They are so cute, and I picked up different colored top frames that snap right on so I can change my look in seconds. Not only do they have sunglasses like I got, but they have prescription glasses too. I've been wearing my pink clear frames as we near the end of summer, and will be swapping those out with my tortoise and black top frames as the weather cools off. When you're going through a breakup, it's fun to switch up routine and style, and you can fall into a new routine with infinite possibilities from Pair Eyewear. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code HEARTBREAK for 15% off your first pair. And support the show by mentioning that Heal Your Heartbreak sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's Pair, P-A-I-R, eyewear.com, code HEARTBREAK. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another expert episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today, I am joined by Maddie Elberger, who is a New York City-based DBT and CBT therapist. She's an adjunct professor at Columbia University, and her specialty really is DBT, which is something that I have always been very interested in and curious about. She breaks it down so well in this episode. We go over what DBT is, why it's so effective, in particular, I think, with breakups, the way that it can help stop those obsessive negative thought loops. We talk about how to move through feelings. We talk about why distraction is actually not a bad thing, which I love, and I think something I've always been a firm believer in, and is there's a time and a place for quote unquote healthy distraction. So she gives so many practical tools as to how to utilize DBT in your day to day, especially when you are navigating through a breakup. So I love talking to Maddie. Honestly, if I lived in New York, I would see her as a client. She's just has such a great take on things, and you can tell her passion for what she does is so, so apparent. So love talking to her. Very excited to share her with you guys. Welcome, Maddie, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Very excited to have you on today and talk about DBT, and I'm sure a whole lot of other things in between. So really happy to have you on.
I'm psyched to be here. I really feel like your message is super in line with a lot of what we talk about in terms of like managing emotions in DBT. And so I think like breakups are something that obviously give us all huge emotions. So like, why not marry the two, if you will?
Yes, I love that. So first talk to me about whenever I talk to therapists, I love like clarifying how they chose the particular specialty that they were in. So what drew you to this particular route with therapy?
Sure. That's actually a really good question. People usually say like, why did you become a therapist? Which is like a fine question. It's like, you know, because I'm good at it or yes. Like, But I like this question because it's particularly because of how we work in DBT and like who we treat traditionally. Like, I think it's an interesting question. So in grad school, most of my, you know, externship, internship, research experience was around trauma, like, and specifically like more like developmental trauma. So childhood trauma that had to do with like emotional neglect and that kind of stuff. And I was a trauma person before I was a DBT person. And then I had my first job after I finished grad school and all that, all the training, at a practice that was really, really different from the way that I was trained. I was always trained in a very cognitively behavioral manner. And I was like, you know what? Like, I want to do something different. I want to get different experience. I'm going to go do something that's the literal opposite of that. And lo and behold, it like wasn't a good fit for me. I was very unhappy there. And even though I was doing trauma work, it wasn't the type of trauma work that I had been trained on, and I didn't feel like I saw people improving in the way that I had in cognitive behavioral treatment. So I'm like, all right, like, I gotta go. Like, this, I'm not gonna last in this career if this is what's going on. Never been miserable here before in my life, and here I am in psychology, miserable. So I was like, all right, I gotta go back to my roots. And I had a friend of a friend of my like ex-husband at the time. He's a psychologist, and he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I think you should apply to this practice. They're a really, really prestigious, big DBT practice. I think you'd be really good at DBT. Now, I knew what DBT was. I had taken a couple of courses in grad school that had covered, you know, suicidality or self-harm, emotion dysregulation, DBT, like on a broad sense, but I had never really, I had never looked into specific like heavy training in DBT. So I was like, I mean, I don't know why you think that, but all right, YOLO, like, let me try it. And I applied for this job at this practice, and I ended up getting the job. And that's how I ended up in DBT. My kind of thought on dialectical behavior therapy is, and what I say to my students and my trainees, like folks that I'm mentoring and supervising, I say, you know, DBT is a self-selecting treatment for clinicians. It's not for everyone. And at the same time, the folks that it is really for, like, you're in it for life. And so it's, some of it has to do with a personality fit. Some of it has to do with like, actually a lot of it has to do with a personality fit, I think. And so I'm just one of those people who's like really meant to be doing this work. And I really haven't looked back. And so much of it is trauma oriented. So I just feel like it was really the step in my career that I needed, that like the universe like guided me to take, if you will. I'm a little woo-woo.
Yeah, no, I am too. You're in good company. So what is DBT?
Dialectical behavior therapy. I'm going to give you like the Maddie Ellberger version and like the more straight edge version. We're going to like mix and match them a little. That's like very much so my style.
Okay.
So DBT stands for dialectical behavior therapy. It is a cognitive behaviorally based treatment for a lot of different stuff right now. It was originally created for borderline personality disorder, which is a disorder that's marked by like really extreme emotion dysregulation with impulsivity, like impulsive behaviors and often like suicidality. So that's what DBT was created for. And it has since been normed, right? Like, so found to be useful for depression, anxiety, certain types of OCD related thoughts, eating disorders, substance use disorders. So it's really effective to integrate DBT into almost anything, and or to do adherent DBT or like full DBT with so many different disorders. Like the Maddie Ellberger version of what is DBT is the treatment that helps you identify, manage, and maintain really big emotions so that you're driving the car of your life. You're not like an 18-wheeler on a highway, like, because your emotions are driving the car, you're driving the car. And the way I like to think about it is that, like, don't come to therapy with me or in DBT or downtown behavioral illness because you want to be happier, right? Like, I don't even know what that means. Happiness is such an amorphous term. And it's like, I think especially if you're struggling, it creates this like mecca that's not, you're looking for something that you can't even describe. I always say come to treatment if you want to be able to live a life that has pain, not in pain. You want to deal with your shit better, because guess what? That's actually going to make you feel more content. That's going to allow you to find more joy, which is how I would maybe define happiness. So it's a set of skills. It's a individual treatment and a set of skills that teach us how to be able to, if we are highly sensitive people, actually live with and like harness the fact that we're highly sensitive people so that it doesn't keep getting in the way of us having the life we want or the relationships we want.
I love that. And that's such, I've never thought about that, but that is true. It's like, if you're saying, I want to be happy, but you don't even know what being happy is, you're kind of describing something that you're either putting it in the hands of someone that doesn't know you, you know, or you're just going on a path that you don't really know where it's leading. And I would also argue being able to manage your emotions and handle your life better leads to much better self-esteem and self-worth, because you feel like you're not in control, but somewhat, you know, in control of the things that you can be in control of. So, how does DBT differ from like the stereotypical?
DBT?
Yeah, CBT, like talk.
Okay.
Is CBT like talk therapy?
No.
Okay.
So there's like psychodynamic or like talk therapy.
Okay.
And there's more cognitive behavioral therapy. These are just like different.
Got it.
Like houses of thought, if you will, or philosophies and treatment. So any cognitive behavioral treatment is going to focus much more on the here and now than it is going to do a deep dive on your past life. And it's not to say that in cognitive behavioral treatment, we absolutely do look at and understand someone's history and how they got to where they are. This idea of insight-oriented therapy or talk therapy or psychodynamic therapy, like for me personally, the way that I understand it and the way that I understand the research is like, insight only gets you so far. It's great to know that you feel a certain way because X, Y, and Z events occur to you, and that's legitimate and that's important, and being able to self-validate, which you need to do in order to regulate your emotions. And at the same time, which is DBT thing, I'll explain the end if you want, but
I have it on my list of questions.
Oh, I'm obsessed with that. You're like really good. I love how prepared you are. Insight only gets you so far, right? Insight doesn't tell you how to change things. And so when you think of talk therapy versus cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, like you get a foundation of insight. And the function of having that insight is, okay, well, what do I need to do now to relearn those patterns? The difference between CBT and DBT, DBT is an offshoot of CBT, right? Which just means that it's a treatment where we know that thoughts and behaviors lead to emotions, and it's a triangle and everything's connected, right? So cognitive behavioral therapies are more traditionally like big C, little B treatments. So heavy on the thought challenging, changing thoughts, you know, more again, internal cognitive, and lighter on changing behaviors. DBT is a big B, little C treatment, or it's a B heavy treatment. It's a behavioral treatment because when you are a sensitive person, when you are a big emotion person, your emotions, you feel like you go from zero to 100. What happens to your thoughts is they too go from zero to 100. And therefore, thinking about how to change how you feel doesn't work for somebody who's super emotionally dysregulated, right? It's actually, in theory, more effective or easier to change behaviors, because then you trick yourself into thinking and feeling differently. Your thoughts and your emotions will always follow behaviors. And so for people who are super dysregulated, you're not thinking clearly, because that's just the way the brain works. And so what we want to do is we want to act different so that we think different, so that we can actually feel different.
Yeah. So hence why this is so great for someone going through a breakup, because I'm sure because I think there are a lot of great thought challenging things that we can do when going through a breakup, but I'm such an action oriented person, believer. And I was listening to you on Ariel Lohr's podcast about, she was saying that she learned that when she got sober, and I'm in the same boat. I've been in recovery a long time, and that's what they say. You can't think your way. It's really hard to think your way into acting differently, but it's much easier to act your way into thinking differently, because it's really hard to challenge thoughts when your thoughts are so intense, circular, obsessive. And I mean, the number one thing I hear from people going through breakups is, how do I stop obsessing about my ex? It's like, I mean, it's day in, day out. At night, you're having dreams about them. It's nonstop.
Yeah. And I can tell you, like, for my own, I've had like one really, really, really difficult breakup, and it wasn't my divorce. Newsflash. My divorce is actually,
I feel like
easy,
that's, that is, I mean, not always, but that is very commonly the case, where it's not the divorce, it's the one after, or.
Right. And I mean, like, I think that, I know for me, like being able to lean on the skills that I teach people, like, was hugely important for me in like figuring out how to claw my way out of like a really, really unmanageably difficult place for myself. So yes, action over thoughts always, because again, you can't think yourself out of feeling something, you can act your way out of feeling something.
Yeah. Like if we're sitting, I mean, I'm just thinking like if someone's listening to this and they're sitting at home and they're feeling, you know, obsessing, or it's just hard to sit in the same place and get to a, like the only thing way I can think of it, and it's not even a healthy or quote unquote healthy coping skill, is like opening up TikTok just so I can like stop thinking about something and think about and just change what I'm thinking about. But if I
oh,
can
we're definitely
get up,
gonna go back to that. We're gonna go back.
Okay.
To this. I am so anti the like, this is healthy, this is not, except for when it's actually harmful to you. So we're gonna go back to that. That's
yes.
Good.
And that's why I stopped myself and did my air quotes. Cause I do think, I mean, there have been times in the past few years where like TikTok has been a mental health tool for me. But yeah, I feel like getting up, going for a walk, picking up the phone, calling a friend, something like that is always something that's going to cause more of a lasting shift for me in terms of thinking.
Yeah, it's really whatever flips the switch, right? Whatever you're able to do mindfully, you want to keep doing. And it's like, we can get into the social media thing at some juncture, because that is the hill I will actually literally die on.
Okay.
But I, you know, it's not necessarily what you're doing, it's how you're doing it and what your goal is.
Okay.
Is it in line with what you're trying to do? And are you doing it in a way that's actually effective for you?
Totally. Yes. Is it working for you at the time?
Yeah, exactly. Like that's exactly it. The exception to that is obviously like, you know, any sort of impulsive or traumatic, like sexual thing, drugs and alcohol, like never really want to lean on those, you know,
yeah.
Like as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And any, you know, of course, like self-harm and suicidality, like those are things we need to relearn immediately. But there's, you know, I just find, again, this is the hill I will die on, so whatever. But there's so much black and white and like dogmatic information on the internet. It's so like, do this, don't do this, or do this and don't do this. And this person's right and this person's wrong. And there's no dialectics on the internet at all. So it's like when people delete their TikTok, I'm like, well, do you need to delete your TikTok, or can we actually help you learn how to manage your urges and opening your phone and what you're looking at so that you can utilize whatever's in front of you mindfully? So it's not so all or nothing.
100%. It's so funny. I never really understood how harmful that side of the internet was until becoming a parent. And the information, it's like, don't do this. If you do this, you're ruining children. And if you do this, it's so wild. And you can be scrolling and see two separate things so quickly on like, you should
literally
do this, you shouldn't do this. And I've started noticing that in my space with breakups, of just how do this to get them back. Don't try to get them back. You can never get back together. You can't get back together. It's, I mean, it's
right.
Totally a whirlwind. So I guess we can jump to the question of and, because I feel like this is kind of the path we're going down. But I noticed
yes.
that when I was listening to other interviews you've done and your videos, you're very big on the word and you've been
yeah.
doing it since we've been talking. So I would love if you could talk about why you do that and how it's effective.
Sure. Yeah. So just as like as a joke, like a funny aside, like anybody who is friends with like a true DBT therapist is going to know, like they're going to hear things like, and instead of saying should, you say could. And it's like, and my sister always says to me, like your tombstone's going to say like Dr. Madeline Elberger. And that's like, I'm just like, it's just like so a part of me. And again, in DBT, we really say you have to live the treatment. Like if you're not really kind of engaged and like buying into it, then like you're not going to be able to effectively help someone else change your life. So why do we say and? I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. Marsha Linehan, the creator of DBT, is the person who gave us this framework around language, because thinking and speaking are actually both behaviors, right? They're actual choices. These are things that we have to choose to engage in or not engage in.
Yeah.
And so if we are trying to think in a less black and white manner, because ultimately that's what dialectics are. It's how do two things that might seem completely opposite exist at the same time on the same earth without invalidating one or the other? No one truth is more true than the other truth. And so like, and that reduces rigidity, all or nothing thinking, extreme thinking, black and white thinking, right? So
also like,
and,
sorry, can I just real quick? I also feel like that takes away the obsession that comes with feeling guilt around your feelings, especially after a breakup. I miss them. They were horrible for me. Why do I feel? And then you start obsessing on why you're thinking those two opposing thoughts. And then you're thinking about your thinking. And it just, so I love that idea of two truths existing at the same time.
Yeah. And just to that point, by the way, like another Marshall Linehan quote is, shame is the mortal enemy of problem solving. Like, if there's something wrong with you, which is what shame is, like, that's a problem you can't fix. But if there's a behavior, or like, if you can identify and describe what's going on, well, then you actually can fix something. And so if you're, and shame is often also like manufactured, you're making a judgment on yourself as opposed to like the reality of like, no one really gives a fuck. Like, or like some people might give a fuck, but like, it doesn't really matter. And so shame is a really rough emotion, and that's what gets us really stuck. So bringing it back to Anne, this is like, it's all in the same boat, if you will. We want to start to speak and think in a way that reinforces the idea that there's more than one true thing at a time. And so when you say, I'm so, no offense, but, or like, ugh, I'm so upset, but I shouldn't be, or whatever it is, like, your butt deletes the first part of the sentence. It's like, why are you even saying it? Like, and if you think about the phrase, like, no offense, but, like, the no offense is bullshit. Like, with anyone who says no offense, but, is like, no, you actually know you're about to be offensive.
Yeah.
So, like, let's just, you know, call a spade a spade. We say and because it allows for two things to exist, right? So it's not, it's no offense, like, this might be offensive and. I'm going to give you this feedback, or I'm so upset and I wish I wasn't. Not, I shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. You are upset. So like, what does that mean? Who died and made your brain the king of all that is right and wrong, right? It's just not that black and white. So we say, and because it actually allows us to reflect reality so much more, which is like, this is true. And this is true. And this is true. And this is true. And it's what we do with all of those things. How do we respond to those things when we are at first just still allowing us to say like, oh, this can be true. And this thing that I hate can also be true. And just because I hate it doesn't mean it has to not exist. And just because like it's against me doesn't mean that it's not real. And, you know, all of these things that help us really build cognitive flexibility.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Breakups come with a lot of fears. I know when I was navigating my breakup, I feared I lost my last chance at love. I feared that I ruined the relationship. I felt scared at the thought of dating again. And while these fears are not necessarily true, I know they feel incredibly real. Halloween is coming up, which lets us have fun with what scares us, but what about those fears that don't involve zombies and ghosts? Therapy is a great tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them. Sometimes just voicing my fears in a therapy session is so helpful in taking the power out of them. Because sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears in the first place and holding ourselves back. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartbreak today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/heartbreak. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Investing in yourself can mean many different things when you're going through a breakup. But when it comes to financial investments, investing can feel intimidating and many people don't know where to start. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest in Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Taking initiative over finances and investments is something that has really added to my overall feeling of empowerment and has helped provide a hopeful feeling as I think about my future. And I love that Acorns makes it so easy. Head to acorns.com/heartbreak or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/heartbreak. It is so normal for changes in your hormones, aka your period, to make a breakup feel that much harder, which is why I'm so excited to share Hormone Harmony with you from Happy Mammoth. My hormones have been on a wild ride the past 3 years with my pregnancies, and my PMS was getting to be so difficult to manage. With Hormone Harmony, I love that it supports hormonal balance and regulation, promotes healthy weight loss and curbing carb cravings, improves sleep quality, and reduces occasional bloating and gas. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens, which help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. With over 17,000 reviews and over 2.2 million customers, Hormone Harmony's biggest feedback is women feeling like themselves again, which I know you'd like to experience too. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
I love that. I'm really going to start working on that. So do you suggest that anytime you catch yourself saying, but you just try to take a pause and go back and say, and?
Yes, I do it all, like literally all the time. I do it in like when I'm teaching, I do it when I'm consulting, I do it with my patients. If you're saying but, you want to go back and find a way to, like I say, it said and, you can say and at the same time, like and though, right? Like if you want to try to catch yourself, but catching yourself is like the phrase in DBT that you'll hear the most, because nothing occurs in dialectical behavior therapy, nothing occurs in behavior change or acceptance without the idea that you are aware. You're catching it. So it doesn't matter if you said but 50 times, you notice that you've done that. You say and on the 51st time, and that's how you start to form a new behavior. You catch it, you change it. You catch it, you change it.
How does that apply to more of the inner dialogue stuff? So I guess the thought. So if someone is stuck in a thought loop, how do we utilize that to break out of it, or, you know, flip the switch, as you mentioned earlier?
Sure. So that, like, this is one of the cornerstones of DBT that, like, a lot of people associate with DBT. I've talked a lot about on podcasts and on my Instagram, this idea of, like, you have to first be able to move away from the thought before you can feel better. And so this idea of, like, distress tolerance, right? Like, how do I throw a wrench in whatever it is that's going on for myself so that I can simply, for the benefit of practicing, being able to notice my mind being somewhere and practicing that pull towards focusing on something else. That's what mindfulness is in DBT. It's focused awareness, right? Where am I right now? Where are my thoughts? Where are my body sensations? What are my urges? Like, what do I feel like I'm being naturally pulled to do? And, like, you know, what am I thinking? And then I just lost my place in what I was saying. Hold on. Oh, focus, right? And then how can I refocus my brain? Speaking of focus.
Yeah.
LOL. Classic me, by the way. That is a classic. Any of the patients who are listening to this are going to be like, yeah, that makes so much sense. So this idea of I am ruminating, right? First thing you, like, if it is a thought that is, like, really disturbing to you, I would say you immediately just want to practice refocusing. So making a list of 10 things that you'll do for at least 5 minutes is my classic distress tolerance go-to with all of my patients, whether or not they're doing more intense DBT or just DBT-informed therapy. Let's think of a list of 10 things you can do that you'll do for at least 5 minutes where you are going to really objectively practice the idea of where is my mind focusing right now? Because brains can't actually focus on more than one thing at a time. When we actually do try to do more than one thing at a time, we feel cuckoo crazy. We make mistakes.
Yeah.
That's why mindfulness asks us to do one thing at a time, because when you're multitasking, which is, like, I don't know who sold, like, what corporate MFer like sold that, like, dream to all of us. But when you're multitasking, your brain is actually going back and forth really fast, which is why you end up making mistakes, leaving things out, forgetting, blah, blah, blah. And makes you feel, like I said, more cuckoo crazy. So it's like, can I choose these activities? I'm going to have this list on my phone so I can never say, well, I had nothing to do, because I have my list right here. What can I do right now to practice moving my mind? Moving my mind isn't necessarily going to make me feel better, but I can guarantee that if I don't move my mind, I will continue to feel worse and worse and worse. So distress tolerance is, how do we practice rerouting our automatic response so that we can then get ourselves to a place where we figure out how to problem solve or what we need to do next to start to reduce the intensity of the emotion.
That makes total sense. Can you share a couple examples of what might be on a list like that?
1000%. So first and foremost, I always like if I'm talking to a patient or like a friend calls me and they're like, I need you to DBT me. And I'm like, okay, if you insist, I will always say, what do you already do? Like, what do you move towards that's distracting? And this is a great opportunity for us to talk about TikTok. So I always start with like, what do you already do that like is distracting? It can be something that takes more than 5 minutes or less than 5 minutes. It doesn't matter, but let's start with that. I can tell you my list. Something that I will always talk to people about is phone a friend, not to vent, right? So I have a few people in my life, my best friends, like my sister, my best friends, who I will say to them, I'll text if I need a distress tolerance moment, if I'm stuck or I'm feeling really dysregulated and I'm like, I need to reroute, I'll text all three of them, see who answers me first. And I'll say, hey, do you have 5 minutes and need a distraction? It is not at this time that I'm going to talk about the thing that's making me feel like shit. Because if I'm talking about it, I'm thinking about it, and then I'm reinforcing it, and guess what? That's going to maintain or intensify the emotion. I am calling my sister who works at Bridgewater Capital or whatever, it's a hedge fund, and I'm being like, oh, like, how many meetings do you have today? Like, not because I give a shit or understand a goddamn thing she does, but like, because it is an opportunity for me to focus on what she is saying. So it's phone a friend, not to vent. You tell that person, I'm just dealing with a thing. I'll tell you about it later when it's like less raw. There's no problem with sharing something. You can vent about something later, but not when you're in like high distress, not when you're in the red zone, like nuclear war zone of emotion. So I love that one. And like the idea is in DBT, we like to like plan for the worst, hope for the best, right? So it's like, well, that means you need to prep your friends in advance and say, oh, I'm gonna start checking in with you when I need to distract myself. So when I tell you that I can't talk about a thing at a certain time, that means don't ask me, but like there's legwork that we have to do to make this work. And when we troubleshoot properly, it works, right? So that's a big one. I often tell people to listen to a podcast and take notes, not because, again, there's something you need to remember, but it's the idea of like sometimes adding that kinesthetic piece or like adding a more active piece to a listening thing helps us stay more focused. We know when we're not paying attention to something if we're trying to like take notes on it because we missed it. So we'll have to go back. The caveat, of course, is don't listen to something that's triggering. I literally could not watch, listen to, read anything that had to do with relationships for probably close to 6 months after like this really traumatic breakup that I had. I've always been a history buff, so I really leaned into World War II. It was the only thing that was not triggering to me. I watched Band of Brothers, it's my favorite show on TV. I always say that one person's distress tolerance is another person's nightmare. I'm sitting here watching like the Battle of the Bulge and DJ, and I'm like, this is fucking great. Like, this is the only thing that I can focus on. Like, I've watched The Sopranos because there's literally nothing romantic about that. Don't listen to, don't watch something that's going to make you feel worse. That's not effective, right? The goal here is we want to try to be effective. So, and I know I'm talking a lot, but I'm going to give you the
Yeah, no,
TikTok
this is
information
great.
here. So here's the TikTok thing. So I was going through a situationship early 2023. I was in a weird place. I had just moved back to America from Tel Aviv, Israel, where I was living. And it was just a complicated time. So I was going through this, like, break. This guy was like, just, who happens to be a very close friend of mine now, and I adore him. He like kind of blew me off, like he sort of ghosted me, like replaced me with another girl, and I was really upset. Like I had never, as a person who got divorced in their 30s, like I had never really experienced ghosting before. Like this was all new to me. And again, I was in that place where I was like, I can't listen to any books or, read any books, watch any shows that are like mainstream because there's so much relational stuff in there that just makes me feel really sad and like really low. So I was like up at like 2 in the morning one day and I was just like, I don't even know how to use TikTok and I don't actually know what possessed me to do this. I just decided to search viral makeup trends. I don't wear makeup. I don't know how to wear makeup. Like, thank you, mom and dad, for blessing me with like skin that I don't have to like cover my face. Like, I really, that's not sarcastic. Like, I don't know anything about makeup. I'd never bought makeup before in my life. That was the best thing I ever did was randomly type those words into TikTok because I would then use that as a distress tolerance. So if I was ruminating, I'd open up TikTok. I would make sure to type that specific you know, search in, because I don't want to just, my algorithm's going to be like, break up this, break up that, because, you know, like Big Brother's always listening.
Yeah.
But I would go on makeup TikToks and they were totally not triggering to me. I ended up buying a lot of makeup, which I don't really use now, but you know what?
It's okay.
It like, it worked. And so that's why with social media specifically, there is a way to use it effectively. It's all about mindfulness. It's about what your goal is. What are your intentions and how willing are you to stick to that? How willing are you to not do the thing that like your emotions might want you to do, which is like search X, Y, and Z thing that's going to make you feel all fucked up, and actually do what's effective, what's going to distract you. I became a makeup girly. It was like an era all my friends know about, like me and my makeup era, but it really helped. So distress tolerance can be anything. It's just, okay. it's about doing it mindfully.
That's why I like TikTok, because I will be just all of a sudden on like deep sea fishing and I'm watching people catch crab and lobster. And I'm like, I'm not thinking about anything that's,
yeah,
I have nothing to do with crab and lobster. And so I never understood why I like TikTok in that way. It's because a lot of the time it will give me something so off the cuff to focus on that has nothing to do with my life.
What?
And
yeah.
I'm sure, to play devil's advocate a little bit here, when people say, okay, if you're taking yourself out of the situation, is that, because I get this question a lot, is that ignoring? Am I not actually facing the feelings because I'm taking myself out of them?
This is a fabulous question. I love this question. And I'm actually really glad that your community is asking you. This is a really like mindful question, right? So the answer is yes and yes. The first thing we need to do before we can actually change the intensity of an emotion is stop engaging in it. Distress tolerance is intentional avoidance of a particular thought or emotion that is going to trigger more intensity and then potential impulsive behaviors, which don't have to be dangerous. But it's like, I always say, like, my kryptonite is texting someone for attention. I actually, knock on wood, just started dating someone. I have a lovely boyfriend for the first time in like years. But
yay.
Love
it.
Like, you know, I know for me, like if I get into that, like my spiral is going to lead me to send a text to like, just kind of like engage, like get attention, test someone without even realizing that I'm testing them. Like, I don't want to do those things because I don't have any control over how that person's going to respond. And 10 out of 10 times, it's going to make me feel worse. Like, I'm going to look back and I'm gonna be like, ooh, that was so cringy. Like, right. So yes, you are avoiding the way you're feeling in the moment because you know that if you maintain that thought process, it is going to make things worse for you, which is going to keep you in this sort of whirlpool for longer and longer. The more you can practice not engaging in urges, whether it be the urge to like check in your brain or the urge to like think about memories or the urge to search someone
reach
on social,
yeah,
chat, whatever it might be, the less you do that, the less intense you will feel the emotion. Then there is space to effectively problem solve. And effective problem solving could look like exposure to the emotion. It could look like acceptance. It looks like a lot of different stuff, but you can't do that when you're in high distress. Like I said before, when you're emotionally dysregulated, you're cognitively dysregulated. Like, it's not like you can, you know, solve world peace when you're freaking out. So
yeah.
You need to be in a place where you're not freaking out, where you can actually tolerate thinking about the thing, even though it doesn't feel good, without doing something more harmful to the situation, that you can then change the emotion. You absolutely always have to come back to, okay, what do I need to do here to work on this situation? But it's just about being mindful of when you do that. Like I said, you're not going to do that when your emotions are at like Chernobyl. It's just not effective. You can't.
Yeah. I also feel like, particularly with breakups, the problem you're trying to solve is not really a problem you even can solve, because your problem is you're not with this person anymore. You can't fix, quote unquote, fix that. You can learn how to live your life without that person. But I think people get so focused on what went wrong. How do I fix this? Why did the breakup happen this way? It's just not even a problem that you're going to be able to solve, even if you had the crispest thinking possible.
Right. Well, and that's why sometimes the solution is leads you towards radical acceptance. Is this a term that you're like familiar with at all?
I mean, I'm probably not in the DBT realm, but I mean, acceptance is a big thing in AA and
yeah.
All that.
By the way, any of my patients who I'm not good at effectively treating two things, anorexia and substance use because they're both really, really self-reinforcing, right? Like nothing's going to be better than a drug. So if that's the primary concern, I always like, I love AA. I'm hugely supportive of AA. I've been to AA meetings. So like AA is really, really in line with a lot of DBT concepts.
That's what it feels like. It feels very, yes, it feels like it's very familiar.
Like they go hand in hand. It's perfect. So just like for anyone out there who's like listening to this and might want to work on some of that, like find a sober friend and like go to a meeting. But anyway, not the point of what we're saying. The point of what we're saying is what is acceptance, right? So yeah, obviously acceptance means like you're taking something for what it is, right? But like what is radical acceptance? Radical acceptance is when you have tried to fix or change everything that you can fix or change and it's not changing, then you need to accept and you need to radically accept. So that's when you learn to turn your mind away from the, if I only did this, or the, it shouldn't be this way, this is unfair. There's no place for fair, unfair, should, like, if only I had a time machine, when we are dealing with how do I tap into my intuition or my wise mind and effectively move forward with my life, right? So we don't immediately go to acceptance because we do want to try to solve what we can solve. And at the same time, when we have no other options, like in a breakup, like in a death, God forbid, like when you're stuck in traffic, when you are stuck in stupid effing traffic, right? Then we have to radically accept, which means we don't like it. We're not happy about it. We're not trying to change it. Radical acceptance is not, I don't give a shit. It's not like, okay, whatever, I'm letting go. It is releasing the urge to try to make something different that physically cannot be different. And often when we radically accept, we might feel, instead of a lot of anxiety or anger, we might feel like a deep sadness. You know, it's not necessary. It's not going to change. It's not happy. It's just, I'm no longer engaging in suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm accepting this for what it is. I'm accepting how this limits, like the limitations of this on my future. And what does that then allow me to see? If I'm no longer going to try to change the fact that this person broke up with me or I broke up with this person, and I'm no longer going to keep going back and like, you know, doing the whole like mental compulsions in my mind of like replaying every memory, well, then that perhaps allows me to actually say to myself, like, can I assess, how did I really feel this relationship, right? Or does that actually allow me time to be able to figure out like what it's like for me to be by myself so that I can have more meaningful relationships in the future? Does that allow me to start dating again? Like, who knows? But we often say that radical acceptance like really kind of opens the door to other possibilities and like other problem solving, generally speaking.
Yeah. I mean, that makes so much sense, especially for breakups, because I mean, just speaking from all the messages and everything that I get, it's the people that I have found that are repeatedly in my DMs who are just, I'm still not getting it. I'm still not getting it. I'm still not getting it. It's usually because they're so stuck on one particular thing that they cannot solve, or they haven't figured, quote unquote, figured out. And mm-hmm. they have not even really allowed themselves to be sad, to do those things, because it's just so hyper-focused on something that just they can't change, they can't fix.
Yeah. And it's often like radical acceptance occurs around things that like an emotion that usually like is like the most intolerable for you, right? So like I had a supervisor literally like 10 years ago at the beginning of my career, and when I switched to this DBT practice and started working there, who like asked me, she's like, are you more of a change person or more of an acceptance person? Like, where do you fall on that like balance beam, right? And mm-hmm. and like, what emotions do you run from? And it was like a really meaningful question, because it's like, what am I running from here? Am I more comfortable, because it's familiar to be anxious, that I actually really don't know what to do with sadness? And so am I constantly trying to change sadness, which is anthropologically, I lost something and I can't get it back, which is then making me nervous because I can't actually change it. So am I suffering, right? Am I running from what I actually am experiencing to experience something equally as uncomfortable but more familiar that keeps you stuck?
Yeah. Yeah. That's very insightful. I mean, that's making me think. I'm the same. I always tell people, I'd so much rather you give me a list of 10 things that I can do to change how I'm feeling versus
sorry, this is the reality. Yeah.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
yep, 100%. And I think that's like so many New Yorkers, and not just New Yorkers. I think that's a lot of number one, like people in the world now, because like there's just so much, there's so many options of ways to like fix things because the internet. I mean, I'm 35. It's not like I'm like the oldest person in the world, but like, you know, I grew up without the internet and then with the internet. And like, there's just, it's, you know, it's a whole other ball game. But anybody who is a, you know, an action oriented or success oriented person feels like they have their shit together. Like, you're not going to be the person that's like, well, I'm really sad about this. Like, that's just not natural. You have to actually teach yourself mindfully how to do that.
Yeah. I love the reminder of this conversation of you can't fix the problem when you're deep in it. It requires that space. And so if someone is feeling bad about distractions, it's, you know, at least that's a big thing I've taken from this conversation is you can take the distraction and then come back to assess it when you have clear thinking. My dad would always remind me of that is like when he calls it the mood elevator. If you're at the bottom of the mood elevator, you are not
thinking
clearly at all.
The mood, right? But that's 100% true. Like, you're just not like, and like, interestingly, when we problem solve or we do stuff when we're at the bottom of the mood elevator, which I actually love, like, it's usually going to be stuff that, again, like feels like a release in the moment and will likely make us feel worse in one way or another, like even 5 minutes later. Like, so it's a dialectic, not to be whatever, but it is a dialectic. You can't just stress tolerance your life away. And at the same time, you can't fix a problem when you're too distressed.
Mm-hmm.
So the solution, the middle path to that is distract yourself from doing the things that are going to make you feel worse. We're going to make the situation worse until you can get to a place where you can effectively problem solve, which doesn't have to be, I feel good. It just has to be, I'm not at my 100 or my 90 or my 80.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I've learned so much from this conversation. I definitely want to have you back to like talk more about what to do specifically with breakups, but thank you so much for coming on and sharing this. I'm very excited to start using AND. That's been my big action item from this. So can you tell people how they can connect with you and find you?
Sure. I am on Instagram as the Millennial Mindfulness Doc. It's my favorite little nerdy thing about me, that name.
I love it.
So you can find me there. You can find my practice. We are a practice of four and growing at www.downtownbehavioralwellness.com. We are accepting new patients. We are accepting new job applications. So please come through if you have questions or you're interested. You can also reach out to me via email at contact@downtownbehavioralwellness.com.
Amazing. And can you only work with clients in New York?
New York and Florida is where we're licensed.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much. Hopefully everyone can connect with you. And I just loved this episode. So thank you so much.
Kendra, this was like so fun. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.